All right, so we are back with the interview with Sister Ina Marie. All right, so let me move on to a few different types of questions. I was wondering about how people in this community, if you saw them express their culture or pride in their Mexican heritage.
Yes, I think so. For the most part, they're very proud to be from Mexico or Guatemala too. Guatemalans are very proud of their country. We have two of them in our ESL class now, and they always bring their country into whatever it is we're talking about. Yes, I think, and even though Cinco de Mayo is not something they celebrate there at all, mm-hmm. they're always happy to take part and celebrate here because it is part of their culture. But religious-wise, I would say that, they hold on to their values, and their family customs are very important to them. They don't like it if their kids get too Americanized too soon. You know, they really want them to keep with their own traditions, and that's hard when they get to be teenagers and are mm-hmm. very immersed in our own culture. But
do you remember if people would like sing traditional songs or?
Oh yes,
like
oh yeah, and it all has to do with the church, you know, for the most part. Like their 9 days before Christmas, they have a song they sing. They go house to house, and they form two groups. One group is inside, and one group is outside, and they're asking to come in. Kind of honoring Joseph and Mary going, trying to find a place to stay. And that's the posadas. And they always want to take part in that. And then those end usually by, they go to maybe two or three houses. And then the third house receives them in. And they always have something to eat and to drink and stay and visit. And that's important to them. And then Feast of Guadalupe is one where they really are willing to make sacrifices. They get up at 5 in the morning or 4 and come to church for the mañanitas. And then after that, they have something to eat. And the men all eat first so they can go to work right after. And then the women and children eat later. And we always had that at St. Alexander's. They still do, I'm sure. So those things are really important to them. And in contrast, this is going back to Peru, but in Peru, they don't do a thing. It's just, we were just shocked at, there's no gifts, they have no trees, they have nothing. All they celebrate is going to church and the Mass. And after that, they go home and go to sleep. There's no gift giving or anything. It's just a spiritual celebration. And that was very different. But let's see, what else do the Mexican people... Oh, their desfiles, their parades that they have on Independence Day. Those are all very important. Their flag...
So you mentioned Guatemalans. Is there a considerable portion of the Hispanic population here that's
yeah.
from Guatemala?
Yes, and they kept them separate in camps. So pretty much all the Guatemalans were in Camp Barbie, and that was a really big camp. Now, whether they always do that, I'm not sure, but I know that we had two different camps where the people were pretty much from Guatemala. And they tend to stay together.
Okay. But But were there Guatemalans that coming to St. Alexander for worship?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
So they weren't segregated.
Oh,
there
no.
From the church.
No.
Uh-huh. Okay.
In fact, that was, I guess they were Mexican. I was just thinking, one day I got a call. This would never happen today. But I got a call from a school and said that a little third grader had fallen on the jungle gym and hurt his shoulder. And they called the mother, and she had no transportation, and told them to call me and have me take him to the hospital. And so I did. She didn't want me to come get her because it would be quite a ways to go. So she said, just take him to the hospital and then bring him home. So I did, and he had a cyst growing, and it was a good thing it happened because it was impairing his bone growth. He had a big cyst that broke when he fell. And anyway, they took care of it, and he was okay.
Do you remember people talking about some of their hopes or desires for themselves when they were working for their families?
Yes, mostly for their kids. You know, not I would say that, in fact, this family that I helped buy a house, the father was starved as a child, and he was a welder, but his back was so bad he had to give up welding. He was really crippled. And I thought something could be done, so I took him to the doctor. I said, Rogelio, we're going to go see a doctor. Surely they can do something for your back. And he said, in Mexico, they told me no. And so we went. And after they did x-rays and tests, the doctor called me in to his office by myself. And he said, do you know this man very well? And I said, well, I've known him for a couple of years now. And he said, there's nothing we can do. They said he was starved as a child, and his backbone never developed like it should have. And so he has, they called it a splintered back or something. I don't know, but it wasn't, there was nothing they could do. They said surgery wouldn't help him. And so when I went out, I felt terrible. And I said, Rogelio, did the doctor tell you why your back is this way? He said, yeah, I didn't have enough to eat. I said, why not? And he said, I had a brother older than me, and there were seven below me. And he said, we never had enough food. And I knew that if I ate my food, my mother would have nothing. He said, I tried to save for her, but my brother always ate my food and his too. And he said, no matter what I did, I couldn't keep it for Mama. And he said, I was hungry all the time. And I just thought, what a way to grow up. So he couldn't keep the welding job he had. I think he had it for maybe five or six years, and he was making such good money, which was really helping. And his kids were in high school then. And so when they got out of high school, they all, one wanted to be a dentist. He would go in as a high school kid in a dentist's office. The dentist told him to come in, and he'd familiarize him with the different things, you know, and explain some things to him. Well, then he went to Iraq instead. He went to the war. And when he came home, he decided that it would be better for him to be a lawyer. He had started classes already in the service. So he's a lawyer today and got it passed his bar. I'm just so happy for him.
Wow.
And the oldest boy, when he went to Forest Grove High School, they taught Japanese. And he took Japanese. There were only five kids in the class. He was the top one. He got a wonderful job because of knowing Japanese. Married a Japanese girl, and they have a little child. And the third boy had two tours over in Iraq, and he's out now, and he's married and has a child. But it's just so good to see them do so well. But the father, The father can't do much. He raises a little garden at home and can work on it a little while at a time. And, but the mother is working, so. Yeah, sad stories.
So it sounds like a lot of, well, especially with that family, but parents making big sacrifices for their children.
Oh, that's right. You were asking, yes. And I think the big thing is that they want them to be able to have things they didn't have. Not so much that they're wealthy, but that they'll have a good job and be able to support a family. And you just hear that all the time, and they want them to go to school. And like the triplet family, the older boy is, he's out of high school probably 3 years now maybe. And I asked him the last time I saw him, a couple years ago now, I guess, I asked what he was doing, and he said he went to community college to take a course in mechanics. He loves to work on cars, and I guess he's good at it. So with a two-year thing there, he'll have a license to work in a garage or whatever. So that's what he wants to do. So it's so, and a number of the kids who didn't want to go through a four-year college also went and took landscaping, and there's good money in that, and they're very good at that because they know how to take care of plants and just weed and spade, and you know, that kind of thing is kind of second nature to many of them. So it's really good to see them. What I get concerned about is when the girls get so girl crazy already at sophomore and don't want to finish school and get pregnant, and there goes their life. And yeah, it's a hard battle. But I think for the most part, they're willing to make any kind of sacrifice to give their kids an education. And that's good to see.
Yeah. Well, not too many more questions, if you don't mind. We keep going. I was kind of curious about families moving back and forth and relocation. During your work, were a lot of families moving?
Oh, constantly.
Back? Okay.
Constantly. That's why it was so hard to try to keep a census for the church, because they'd be here a while and then move to Dayton or move to Woodburn. They'd hear of a good job. I would have kids prepared and ready to make their first communion on a Sunday, and Saturday they found out their job ended, but they found out there was a job in Washington. So Saturday night they pick up and go, and they're not there for Sunday. You know, that just happens a lot. And once they, and that's with the people who just move in, and until they really get settled, they move many times. And it's always where the work is, you know, where they can find a job or a better job or whatever. So there is a lot of moving.
It sounds like the families that you got to know eventually, did they start to settle? Or?
Yes, I'd say a lot of them did, though not all. Many, many moved on, but the ones I probably was closest to were people who stayed here. Like out in Farmington Road, there's a Hikus farm out there, and there were five brothers, and they all lived, they all had families, and I got very close to that group. I went out for every fiesta they had, and every time someone had a birthday, all of the families would get together out on the farm, and they'd have a barbecue, roast a goat or pig or whatever, and have a big celebration. So I was real close to those families, and the oldest one was the only one who didn't work on the farm. He worked on the road. He had a very good job in construction. He drove one of those big graders that they have tearing up the cement, and that's a very high-paying job. And so, but the other four were all on the farm, but none of them are there now. That's they've changed the way they farm, and so they're not raising the berries; they're raising garlic, and it's just completely changed. So, but each one of them have their own home now after working out there for probably 20 years. They have their own home in, one's in North Plains, two are in Cornelius, and one in Hillsboro, yeah.
You work more with mothers and children, but do you remember a lot of workers in the camps that were here that had their families back in Mexico, or they were working by themselves?
Oh yeah, uh-huh. One man named Francisco, I was able to get him a job at Tuples, that's the big nursery, or was the big nursery in Hillsboro. And Mrs. Tuple was a good friend of mine, Margaret. She was the, her son is running it now. But that's a place I would take people for work. And when Francisco came, he was an older man. I think he was probably 40, 45 when he came. And it was his first time here, and he was staying with a family that I used to go visit a lot, and he needed a job. So I said, you be ready tomorrow at 5, and I'll come pick you up. I think the Tufels need help. So I took him out there. And Mrs. Tufel afterwards thanked me. She said, he's one of the most polite men that's ever worked for us, and so responsible. And he had five daughters back in Mexico, and his wife. He has no sons, but he had all these girls. And he said, he told her that if he could get a little bit more pay, he would have enough to send material back to his wife. Sewed very well, and they could all have new dresses for Christmas. And so they gave him a job sweeping up after he did his 8 hours. He swept up and did all the cleanup for him. So after that, they changed his hours so that the cleanup was part of his work, and he wouldn't have to have the overtime, because they weren't supposed to give too much overtime. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he got me one day and said, I need some help. I said, what can I do for you? Take me to a store where they sell nice material for women's dresses. So I said, okay, we'll go to Joanne's. So we went. He said, I want to buy material so my wife can make two dresses for all 5 of my girls and for herself. And I said, do you have any idea how much that would take? And he said, well, I'll send extra so there'll be sure to be enough. So we went to that store, and he had more fun picking out material. We sent two boxes, I think, about like this back to Mexico, for he couldn't go himself. It would take too much money. So he wrote and talked to her on the telephone, I guess, and said he wouldn't come for Christmas, but he was sending this early so she could make them a Christmas gift. And so I helped do that. And, you know, he was still working there. I went about 3-4 years ago, and I used to always say hello to him. And when I went this last time, the girl told me, the Tupo girl that now works there, she's the granddaughter, told me that he went back to Mexico to stay, that it was getting too hard. He was over 60, and so he was going to go back, but she said, he'll have a nice little Social Security check for him coming in back there. And they have a little place. So she said he was just so happy to be able to go back home. Mm-hmm. So that was nice. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And many of them were very, very faithful about sending money back. And they almost all, if their families were there, well, I shouldn't say all, but lots of them went home for Christmas. They would get the time off because the nurseries didn't work during the January, February. Mm-hmm. And so they would go home in maybe the end of November and not come back till the 1st of March. And then they'd find jobs again. So
I'm going to ask a question that goes back to one of your earlier stories. You were talking about, I think his name was Pablo, that was traumatized by the crossing experience, and you coaxed him into talking a little bit with the candy.
Yeah.
Was he able to speak more normally,
yes,
regularly after that?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And he went to school. He was 2.5, I think, when he came. And so he was with the babysitter for a couple years, and then it was time for him to go to school. And about that time, they only stayed there, I think maybe 3 years, and then she moved to Dayton. By that time, she had found a man who wanted to, I don't know that they married, but anyway, they lived together, and she said he was really good to my kids, or I would never have gone to live with him. And he had a house in Dayton, so they went and moved in with him, and so.
Excellent.
I haven't seen her since she went there, but she was a sweet little lady and had gone through so much with her first husband.
It certainly must take a lot of courage to bring your children over for a new life here.
Yeah. It's so hard. They have to walk so far. You know, that coming here is just a real hard thing to do. And at that time, I think it was safer. Now, they have to be so careful. They kill them and take their cards, their money, there's just such real scary to try to cross unless they're with a big group. Mm-hmm. So now they put them in vans and cover them over with stuff and bring them in that way. Oh, I wonder if they'll ever open the border. I don't know.
Yeah, certainly something that doesn't look like it's going to be resolved soon or easily.
Mm-mm. It's been on the plate for so long.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I have just one last question, and then I'll stop pestering you. But
okay.
So you served, you know, as a religious educator. You helped out these families personally. I'm wondering, maybe is there a way that you could just summarize your role and your relationship with the community?
Well, I'd say I was teacher for probably 30 years, social worker for another 20 years. Done a little bit of everything. My greatest pleasure and the thing that I've enjoyed the most, I have to say, was not the teaching, but the working with the poor. That's just always been my drawing card. And it's so wonderful to, I think now in my, I'm going to be 87 next month, and I think now, what continues to thrill me is when I get a letter from one of the past children I've taught or whatever, and they remind me of the things I did for them and how it helped them. And we had a boarding school here that I had charge of, and I got two letters this past at Easter from two of the girls that were here. And it's just always so nice to know that they appreciated what I did, and makes you feel good about your life. I just feel that my life has really been spent for God in helping His people wherever there is a need. And that's been a real pleasure to do. You're not working for money, but you're working to help the least of His brethren. And I guess that's been my life.
Well, it sounds like you've done quite a bit of good work. That's wonderful.
It's been a very happy life, I must say. I have enjoyed everything I've done, even the things I thought were going to be horrible and hard turned out to be really blessed by God. I just really, I remember one school I was going to go be principal, and I thought, oh, that priest is so strict, I don't know if I'll ever get along with him. And the funny part was, we turned out to be wonderful friends. He wasn't a gruff, and he was more shy than anything. I put on a gruff exterior, you know, but we got along very well. So it's been a wonderful life.
Wonderful. Well, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll finish it. So, again, this is it's May 9th, 2013, at the Sisters of St. Mary Convent in Beaverton, Oregon. I'm Luke Sprunger, graduate student, and I've been interviewing Sister Ina Marie Nozak. Thank you, Sister.
You're welcome.